প্রসারে করে চারবা
Thank you.
Singaura Mata Ganga Jaya Shri Krishna Prabhu Radhe Shiva Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you.
Krishna,
हरे हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा हरे हरे
जय राधा माधव जान बिहारी राधा जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवार धारी जसुधा नन्दना मृज जनरंजन जामुनथिरा मनाचारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी जय ओम विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्राज आचार्य आशुतोष श्री श्रीमार सभाएंगे श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमा भागवतम की जय गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा ओम श्री प्रभुपाद जय ओम अज्ञानतमिरांदशाग्नानंजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामायं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वञ्चाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरी गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमा भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 9 टेक्स्ट 50 स्वयं निश्रय संविद्वान् Navaktyagnaya karmahi Narati rogino patyam Vanchatopi bhishaktamaha Hari Swayam Nishraya Samvidhvan Navhaktya Jnana Karmahi Narati Rugino Patyam Vanchatopi Bhikshaktamaha Mother, you want to try? No. Translation, word to word meaning, I mean. Swayam, personally, Nishreyasam, the supreme goal of life, namely the means of obtaining ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vitvan, one who was accomplished in devotional service. Na, not. Vakti, teaches. Agnaya, unto a foolish person, not conversant with the ultimate goal of life. Understand? Karma, fruit of activities. He, indeed, na, not. Rati, administers. Rogina, unto the patient. Apatyam, something unconsumable. Vanchita, desiring. Api, although. Bishaktamaha, an experienced physician. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. A pure devotee, Vidwan. That's translation. A pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Purport, here's the difference between the benedictions awarded by the demigods and those awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Devotees of the demigods ask for benedictions simply for sense gratification. And therefore, they have been described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 20, as bereft of intelligence. Understand? Kamaish taishte ritigyana prapadyante anyadevataha tam tam niyamam astaya pakritya niyata swaya. Quote, those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Understand? Conditioned souls are generally, that's the end of the quote, conditioned souls are generally bereft of intelligence because of profound desires for sense gratification. Understand? They do not know what benedictions to ask. Therefore, non-devotees are advised in the shastras to worship various demigods to achieve material benefits. For example, if one wants a beautiful wife, anyone here like that? They're all sleeping right now. Who wants to want this one? Those who want a beautiful wife, he is advised to worship Uma, or goddess Durga. If one wants to be cured of a disease, he is advised to worship the sun god. All requests for benedictions from the demigods, however, are due to material lust, comma. The benedictions will be finished at the end of the cosmic manifestation, along with those who bestow them. If one approaches Lord Vishnu for benedictions, the Lord will give him a benediction that will help him return home, back to Godhead. This is also confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 10. Tesham satata yuktanam vajatam priti purvakam dadadmi buddhi yogam tam yenamamupuyantite. Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna instructs a devotee who constantly engages in his service how to approach him at the end of his material body. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 9, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tat totaha tyak twa deham punar janma naiti mam eti so arjuna. Quote, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. End quote. This is the benediction of Lord Vishnu Krishna. After giving up his body, a devotee returns home back to Godhead. A devotee may foolishly ask for material benedictions, but Lord Krishna does not give him such benedictions despite the devotee's prayers. Therefore, people who are very attached to material life do not generally become devotees of Krishna or Vishnu. Instead, they become devotees of demigods. Kamaish taishter hitagana prapadyante anyadevataha. The benedictions of the demigods, however, are condemned in Bhagavad Gita, Antavatu palam te sham tat bhavat dyalpamedasam. Quote, man of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. End quote. Anam Vaishnava, who is not engaged in the service of the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered a fool with a small quantity of brain substance. Small quantity of brain substance. So the demigods were attacked by Vitrasura. They offer prayers for the Supreme Lord to appear before them. The Supreme Lord appears before them. And then they begin to offer the Lord very beautiful prayers filled with knowledge of pure devotion. Very impressive set of prayers that they offer to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, the Lord was very satisfied with their prayers as well, because those prayers were full of knowledge of pure devotion. And Krishna, Vishnu, commented that just by anyone who hears these prayers, they will understand my glories. And the idea that follows is that by understanding the glories of the Supreme Lord, then naturally what follows is one wants to devote oneself to such a glorious person. Isn't it? That's usually what happens. You hear the glories of a person, you want to devote yourself to such a person. So Krishna was impressed with their prayers, that anyone who hears these prayers, filled with such knowledge of devotion, then they would naturally develop some inclination towards my service. And therefore, how unfortunate that even though you offered such prayers with such devotion, that you're asking for such trifles as Swargaloka. He was disappointed. How unfortunate. Even though your prayers demonstrate how much knowledge you actually have of my own position, still you're asking for something trifle, something insignificant. How unfortunate that is. And then in two verses, yesterday's verse and today's verse, Vishnu is expanding upon the misfortune of such persons, who may even be endowed with knowledge, but are overcome by the beginningless impressions of their desires for material enjoyment. Understand? That was yesterday's verse, and today's verse also. So Krishna is saying, yesterday's verse, the idea was that those whose minds, or buddhi, their intelligence, is absorbed in the world of sense objects, then they cannot know what is actually good for them because of their improper absorption. You understand? Just like there's a natural relationship between the material mind and buddhi also, and sense objects of this world. Natural relationship is there. Understand? The mind thinks of the world of sense objects, isn't it? The mind enters the world of sense objects as contemplation. Understand? This hands the mind. It enters the world of sense objects in the form of contemplation. You follow? And the world of sense objects enters the mind in the form of desires. You follow? Mind enters sense objects in the form of... See? Look at it. What is this? Simple thing I'm saying. Still not understand? The mind enters the world of sense objects in the form of contemplation. You're thinking about sense objects, isn't it? What are you thinking about that you're not hearing my point? Thinking about sense objects. So the mind enters the world of sense objects in the form of thinking about them, isn't it? You're always thinking about, all of us, conditions. So we think about sense objects, is it not? Good music, good food, like that. You're always thinking about sense objects. And then when you contemplate those sense objects, then they enter inside the mind as desires. You understand? The relationship between material mind and world of sense objects. Mind thinks of world of sense objects, and then sense objects come into the mind as desires for enjoying them, isn't it? There's a natural relationship between material mind and world of sense objects. You follow? So because of this natural relationship of the material mind and sense objects, then one is always being bound, one becomes bound up to the world of sense objects. This relationship creates a chain binding the consciousness that identifies with their subtle body to the world of sense objects. You follow? So by this natural relationship, that natural relationship is a chain, forms a chain, binding the consciousness of the consciousness of the jiva who identifies with matter to the world of sense objects. You follow? So therefore, this is a remarkable prison because although in one sense one can just get out of it just simply by desiring to get out, you never desire to get out, isn't it? You never desire to get out. Why does one not desire to get out? Because he's chained down by this relationship of the subtle body to the world of sense objects, this natural relationship. He's chained down. You follow? And therefore, although given opportunity to even see the Supreme Lord, like in the case of the demigods, because of also their identification with matter, and therefore being bound up by this natural process of this natural relationship of the mind with the world of sense objects, then they don't ask for the real benediction of bhakti. They don't care for bhakti. They only ask for this sense objects to be fulfilled. You follow? Because they're thinking of sense objects have entered their mind as desires, and now Supreme Lord has appeared before them, but all they're interested in is world of sense objects, because they're of their attachment to their gross and subtle bodies, and subsequently the world of sense objects. You follow? So they don't care for any spiritual thing. They're not interested. Such persons are called as kripanas, misers. Understand? They do not know what his ultimate goal is. That's the previous verse. They do not know what his ultimate goal is. Therefore, they're asking for only foolish things. They do not know who they are. They do not. They're identifying with the gross, subtle body. They're asking for gross or subtle material sense gratification. They do not ask for the real thing, Krishna. Just like Prabhupada tells a story of the lady who was carrying a big burden on her back, and she dropped it. She cried out, "Oh, Govinda!" And Govinda appeared before also, out of his kindness of his heart. And he said, "What is it that you will like?" She said, "Please put this burden back here on my back." And Govinda, "Seriously? I, the Supreme Lord, have come before. I can bestow upon you Braj Bhakti, all such wonderful benedictions. No, no, I'm not interested in that. Please, this burden back here. I was carrying it, I dropped it. Please put it back." Like that. This is the situation of the conditioned souls. We go before the Supreme Lord and we say, "Dear Lord, the burden I was doing a good job carrying it, but now I dropped it a little bit. Can you put it back on my back?" This is the position of all the conditioned souls. So in previous verse, Krishna is saying that those persons who are like that, they are bereft of all intelligence. They are misers. And a person who helps them to fulfill such foolish desires, they are also foolish. You follow? They're thinking like that on account of their identification with matter, this natural relationship I've already explained. They are foolish individuals, they are misers. And those who help them, they are also foolish. So Krishna is saying, "I am not such a foolish person. If I were to help you to achieve such material benedictions, then I will be foolish also. I'm not so foolish." So in today's verse, it's more or less the same point Krishna is making. Swayam nishrayasa vidwan. So vidwan means a learned person. Prabhupada translated as pure devotee. And one who is on the path of his highest well-being. Understand? Nishrayasam. Shreya means ultimate welfare. As opposed to, we hear this oftentimes, prayas. Prayas means immediate gratification. Shreya means ultimate, even you can say gratification, real gratification. Prayas, shreyas. You understand? Two things. Shreyas means ultimate welfare, and prayas means immediate welfare. So you have some mental issues, isn't it? Everyone conditioned souls, we have mental aberrations. Are there so many mental aberrations? So you come to some learned person, vidwan, and you want prayas or shreyas? You want prayas. You want prayas. You don't want shreyas. Who here wants stress? No one wants stress. You want just relief from the mental aberration, isn't it? So then you go to a learned person, he gives you a program for Shreya, ultimate welfare, but it requires so much austerity in the process of getting the ultimate welfare. Austerity is required. Detachment is required. Vidaraga bhayakroda mamanya mama pasrita bahavo geratapasa putama bhavamangata. Krishna says, there are many persons who developed love for me in the past, but what did they do to get that love? Vidaraga Bhaya Krodha, they gave up attachment, fear, and anger. Very difficult. And Bahavo Gena Tapasa, they performed the austerity of knowledge. So you go to a vidwan. Vidwan means pure devotee, learned person, who is on the path of Nishreya Sam. He was on the path of ultimate welfare. That path that leads to the development of prema. That's Prabhupada's word-to-word translation. It's like that. It leads to ecstatic love. So you come with some mental aberration issues there or some situation in your life that is difficult. And you looking for? Prayas, isn't it? You want immediate welfare, sense gratification, relief from the mental disturbance, or I want my desire to be fulfilled, whatever desire is appearing in mind at that moment, then I want it to be fulfilled. Isn't it? Prayas. Then you go to a vidwan, he will give you nishrayasam, the path that leads to ultimate welfare. Oh, I'm not interested in that. Do you have anything for immediate gratification? No, I don't have anything for immediate gratification. Oh, then I am not interested in your program. I will go somewhere else. You follow? Understand? Just like we went to college program yesterday, and Himanshu had handed out so many flyers. He thought it was so many flyers, 500 flyers. Then he said, but only so many people came, like maybe 20 people total, in and out too, 25 people. Not like 25 people solid, but in and out. So he was a little disappointed. Oh, how come more people did not come? So I said, oh, your flyer, you should have a picture of a woman in a compromised situation. Because this is the only thing people understand in Kali Yuga. And then Greg said, yeah, make a silhouette of woman and compromise situation, and then put on there the secrets of Bhagavad Gita. And then you find room full of people. What is this secret of Bhagavad Gita? I also want to know the secret of Bhagavad Gita. You follow? People are interested in it? Pray us, not Shreyas. You follow? That's the point. So we're having program to propagate Shreyas, but people only want Prayas. They're not interested in ultimate welfare. They're interested in getting their desires fulfilled, satisfying their tongue, belly, and genitals. That's what they're interested in. So as a result of that attachment, Shishnodara, Krishna Nahipai, you will never get Krishna. Those who are interested in satisfying tongue, belly, genitals, Krishna Nahipai. Lord Chaitanya says, Krishna Nahipai, you will never get Krishna. Understand? In other words, those who are on the path of prayas, they cannot get Krishna. They get samsara, repeated birth and death. So the vidwan, the learned persons, pure devotees, they're on the path that leads to ecstatic prema. Na bhakti agnaya karmahi, and therefore they will never teach. Na bhakti, they will not teach agnaya, foolish persons. Who is a foolish person? Someone who wants prayers, a foolish person. Someone who identifies with body, mind, and whose consciousness has been chained down by that relationship that the subtle body has with the world of sense objects. This is called as an agnaya, foolish person. Prabhupada's quoting in the purport, kamai shashter hitigyana, prapadyante anyana. Those persons whose knowledge has been stolen by kama, stolen by the beginningless desires in their subtle body, which they identify with. Their consciousness has been stolen away by that relationship. You follow? I already described this. So they're called as agnaya, foolish persons. Idiots. Dummies. That is all of us conditioned souls. We're foolish persons. Na bhakti, they, pure devotees, they will not teach to these foolish persons karmahi, the path of fruitive activity. In other words, a path that will lead to the satisfaction of such desires. They will not teach such things. What do they want to teach to the people? He must have misunderstood my question. What do the vidwans want to teach the people? The learned persons, pure devotees, what do they want to teach? They want to teach ultimate welfare, Shreya. So those pure devotees, vidwan, learned persons, they do not teach to foolish people the path of karma, which will lead to the satisfaction of the desires, for which they will feel grateful. I am eternally grateful to you. You satisfy their desire for sense gratification. You are my well-wisher. I am eternally grateful to you. They say like that. They don't appreciate if you give the other thing. But you get your gratification, fine, but you also get repeated birth and death along with that. So the pure devotees would not do that. And then an example is given. An example is given. That's the second sentence. Na rati rogino patyan. It's just like a rogi. Rogi means a diseased person. Understand? A yogi. Is there like a transcendentalist and rogi, diseased persons? One who said roga means disease. Rogi, one who has disease. Understand? So every condition, so rogi. We're all rogis. They have disease, disease in consciousness. So those who are rogis, then a physician, vishaktamaha, those who are expert physicians, they will not give to a diseased person those things which he should not eat, apatyam. Those things which he should not eat, vishaktamaha means a expert physician. He will not give to a rogi, a diseased person, apatyam, those things he should not eat. Manchuto, even though he may desire it. Manchuto api, even though he may desire those eatables. An expert physician will not even give him a little bit of that which he should not take whatsoever. You follow? So the learned persons who are on the who teach the path of Nishreyasam, who are themselves on the path of Nishreyasam, they will not teach Navakti to foolish persons the path of karma, because it leads to their continuation in the realm of suffering. And then an example is given. Just as an expert physician, Bhiksha Tama, will not give to a rogi, Narati Rogina, apatyam, those things which he should not eat, mantra to api, even though he may desire them. He will not give those things. You follow? That's the verse. That's the meaning. Then Prabhupada's purport is just speaking about the difference between the Supreme Lord and in the worship of the Supreme Lord, and those who worship demigods. So demigods will satisfy people's desires for prayas. And Supreme Lord is only interested in satisfying one's desires for shreyas. You understand? So those whose consciousness, knowledge has been taken away by kama, they worship these demigods according to prakriti niyatasvaya, according to how they're conditioned. Everyone thinks they're so unique, isn't it? What is this word? I learned this word the other day. Sui generis. You know this word, sui generis? Sui generis means unique. It means unique. That's literally what it means. Everyone thinks they're sui generis. I'm a very unique person, individual. Oh, you're very conditioned. So then they think all their ideas are very unique. I'm a very unique person, just like I always like to mention. When go to Belmont and Clark. Belmont and Clark is a place where all the modes of nature gather together. You see all the varieties of species in one spot at Belmont and Clark. And there, everyone thinks I'm a unique person. So you have someone with like a blue mohawk that goes like, you know, like, and someone's got like orange hair that's sticking out from the side, and someone's got piercings all over their body, and everyone, I am unique, sui generis, I'm a very unique person, unique. They think in this way. Generally, conditioned souls, everyone, all conditioned souls think this, I am a very unique person, I'm an individual. And I always say, well, why is everyone on the same corner, going to the same restaurant, shopping at the same shops? And you're so unique, so different, but doing the same thing, same sense gratification, actually. Actually, if you look externally, it all looks very unique. But if you look at it in terms of consciousness, it's all the same thing going on. What is that? An attempt to satisfy desires for prayas. So only externally it looks unique. But if you look a little bit, not superficially, but go beyond the superficial appearance of it, then it's simply desire for sense gratification. And people are pursuing it according to their pakritta niyatasvaya, according to their conditionings. That's all. There's nothing unique going on. It's just people pursuing prayas according to how they're conditioned. That's it. So one person's conditioned this way, and they're going for sense gratification that way. Someone's conditioned in this way, and they're going for sense gratification that way. That's all. That's what the verse says, huh? Nothing special. If you look past the superficialness of what's going on. So someone's, you know, fighting for this right, that right. Just like now, so many fighting for so many different rights. But what is underlying the ostensibly noble fight for rights? You know, no one should be prejudiced against or oppressed and so on. So it seems very noble. But ultimately, what is underlying that? I have the right to sense gratification, and no one should judge me for that. That's the only thing going on. Don't judge me for my particular choice of sense gratification. So you say, yeah, that's fair, actually. Why should we judge other people? But then, ultimately, it's just the same thing going on across the board. Nothing unique. Nothing unique. Therefore, Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks so nicely, so precise. Kamaisha Shri Dagana, their knowledge is stolen by Kama, beginningless desires for enjoyment. They worship Prapadyante Anya Devata. They worship other devatas, persons who will satisfy their desires for gratification, the desires for prayas. And they think they are unique, but they're all pursuing the same thing, Pakritani, according to their conditioning. That's all. Nothing unique. So they approach demigods, and demigods or persons who will satisfy their desires. And they get what they want. And along with getting what they want, they get repeated birth and death also. But those who approach the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord will fulfill desires for Shreyas. Prabhupada quotes a few verses from the Bhagavad Gita, how the Lord helps a person to attain Him, which is the real path of Shreyas, like this. Otherwise, men are little brain cells, Prabhupada says. They have a small quantity of brain substance. Why do they have a small quantity of brain substance? Yes, their mind is stolen by karma. Therefore, no brain. Little. Hardly anything is there. Just enough brain to get their sense gratification. That's it. Just enough brain for that. No more brain. Therefore, when devotees go and speak philosophy, they all become shallow critics. Understand? Because they have no brain for this sort of subject matter. Actually, if you have to judge a particular subject matter, you should be of the same mindset in order to give a fair judgment. We were reading this the other day by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Isn't it? You should be of the same mindset in order to give a fair judgment. Just like if I write a biology paper, then I need another biologist to judge me. Not some foolish person who doesn't know anything about biology, isn't it? That is only then he can give a fair criticism of my work. But if someone is not a biologist who tries to give critique of my work, then it's a meaningless thing, foolish. Similarly, because people's minds are stolen by karma, as you just said, they have little brain substance for spiritual subject matter. And yet they are like to give critique on spiritual subject matter. And he's called the shallow critics. They have small brains for these things because they're too much trapped by desires for sense gratification. You understand? So Krishna is a vidwan also, a learned person. The pure devotees are learned persons. They will never teach these foolish things to foolish people. They will teach the real thing, even if those foolish persons do not like that teaching. They do not appreciate. Understand? Just like if you get jaundice, the only cure for jaundice is sugar candy. But when you have jaundice, sugar candy tastes very bitter. Understand? But then the doctor will not recommend another medicine because there's only medicine that works, apparently. I don't. There's only medicine that can help cure the jaundice. So although the patient will not like the prescription, the physician will not give another prescription because this is the prescription that works. You follow? Similarly, persons, because of having small brains, alpamedasam, small quantity of brain substance, Prabhupada says. They only desire prayas. They go to a learned person, he will give them shreyas. They do not want that. But the learned person cannot give another thing. They only give the thing that works. Of course, interestingly enough, after this, Krishna does appear to satisfy their desires. But that has another purpose in mind. Are there any questions about what we've discussed here? Yeah. I can repeat it because on the. That's prayasa. Yeah, maybe there is a connection though. I'm not a Sanskritist, so like prayasa and prayasa. Maybe there is a. Yes. Sense gratification. They want swarga loka. So what are the demigods' motivations in praying to the Supreme Lord? They want to enjoy Swargaloka. And there's a big impediment in the name of Vitrasura who's stopping them from their enjoyment. Provided one perhaps can arguably say that the demigods are proper rulers or administrators of the universal affairs. And therefore, if the demons take over, that will disturb the organization of the universal affairs. And therefore, the demigods are very much concerned about this. And therefore, are praying to the Supreme Lord to please reinstate us so that we can make sure that the upkeep of the universal affairs goes without disturbance. Unfortunately, none of that was mentioned here. Only thing that was mentioned here was their desires for Svargaloka. Generally, the devatas, it's not that high mode of goodness. Of course, there's more goodness predominant in the heavenly regions. And there are even higher realms than that are really like closer to the pure mode of goodness. But generally, Svargaloka, their desires for enjoyment is very intense. So that means all their motivations is more or less based on those desires for enjoyment. So, it's not very noble, but that's the situation of being a demigod. Now, that can be sense gratification too. See, it's all sense gratification. Is it a middle ground? Not really. Well, there is, okay, so there has to be a gradation. You know. Well, there's really two categories. Those who are in Maya, those who are not in Maya. And for those within Maya, there's a gradation in terms of the mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. And then, you know, the modes of nature, just like you mix three colors and they create an unlimited variety of colors, the three RGB. So similarly, you mix the three modes of nature and you get this spectrum of sense gratifiers. Essentially, it's essentially sense gratification, although one may be more in the mode of goodness and therefore more noble than one in the mode of passion or ignorance, but essentially all sense gratification. That's how, I mean, that the word... Well, it may be motivated by the mode of goodness, but it's within the realm of Maya. So then the word sense gratification is just being applied universally to the realm of Maya. I'm using the word sense gratification and Maya synonymously. So someone may be in Maya in the mode of goodness, like an altruistic worker who doesn't care for transcendence, who doesn't have faith that there is a transcendence, and who therefore doesn't pursue transcendence. This is the all in all. This world is the all in all, end all be all. And so he's in Maya. That's the definition of Maya. He has a vision separate from transcendence or the absolute truth. And within the realm of Maya, he's in the mode of goodness. And he's maybe got more mode of goodness than others in the mode of goodness. So in relatively speaking, it's noble. It's commendable, relatively speaking. Absolutely speaking, it's still Maya. You still get repeated birth and death. I'm using the word my. Yeah, there's self-centered sense gratification and there's self-extended sense gratification. So self-centered sense gratification means it's focused all on me. I will do anything for my own enjoyment. Self-extended sense gratification means when you expand your sense of self to include others and then you satisfy that expanded sense of self. So it's still sense gratification. In essence, you may not like that particular term, you want to use another word, but essentially it's the same thing. You're satisfying your sense of self. Now, for some people, their sense of self doesn't spread beyond their particular body, and so they're acting for that sense of self. For others, their sense of self expands to include others, the whole society, maybe even the whole world, and animals, and the whales, and everything that exists in the world. And then they're satisfying that sense of self, ego. So they're still in Maya, they're still acting for their sense gratification, essentially, although it may be self-extended. And usually the self-extended one gets really nice names, which are usually appreciated by other persons who are also in Maya. And of course, as they glorify each other, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta terms it, a society of dupes. They're all duping each other. Essentially, that's what when you're in Maya, that's what we essentially do. We just dupe each other. And to believing that we're great, that we're doing wonderful things and so on, glorifying it. But what do we get for all of our hard work? We get repeated birth and death. So as commendable as your activity may be in terms of the mode of goodness, in terms of the relativistic world, the result is absolutely the same as those in the mode of passion and ignorance in the sense that you get repeated birth and death. So it is sense gratification, essentially, in essence. Perhaps we don't like that word, but yet. No, subtle things are, sense gratification is basically based on the mind. Because as I mentioned, our ability to cognize the world happens through the subtle body. You follow? So that means that sense gratification really has to do with the subtle body more than it has to do with the senses. Because even the gratification we gain from our senses, we gain only because of our ability to cognize them through the subtle body. So that the whole sense gratification thing is actually taking place in the mind. It's not taking place anywhere else. And therefore, gross and subtle sense gratification, or say it the other way, sense gratification applies to both gross and subtle things. Or you could say primarily it applies to the subtle things because that's the base by which we can even experience the gross. So it's all sense gratification. Or said another way, prema is defined as a desire to satisfy Krishna's senses. And kama is defined as a desire to satisfy one's own senses. Now they're self-centered or they're self-extended. And accordingly, you're satisfying your particular conception of self. So it's sense gratification, in essence. Now we're speaking purely relative, in terms of the relative world, then there's spectrum, there's nuances. This one is a little bit better than that one. But if you're speaking absolutely speaking, it's like all the path of birth and death. And in various colorful ways. Therefore, the learned person, Krishna says, in the very outset of his teachings in Gita, doesn't lament for living or dying. They're all doing sense gratification. he sees very neutrally, in terms of knowledge. There's all sense gratification going on. So, well, maybe even the mode of goodness. Fantastic. But it's just, mode of goodness is described like going to the airport, but not getting on the airplane. Airplane means transcendence. So if you go to the airport, you don't get on the airplane, then your position is more or less the same as those who never went to the airport. Grounded, in other words. You're still on the ground level. That's the point. So similarly, you may be in the mode of goodness, but if you don't use that goodness to transcend, then your position essentially is the same as those in passionate ignorance, namely repeated birth and death. You continue on in samsara. Perhaps because you were in the mode of goodness, you get a better situation in samsara. Before the modes take over and degrade you and elevate you and degrade you, you know, forever until you transcend Hare Krishna. Follow? Yeah. I didn't say material variegatedness is false. Yeah, my point was that the apparent material variegatedness in terms of action is really not that variegated because it's all based on one core thing, the desire for sense enjoyment. And so according to the conditioning, which is variegated, they're going for sense gratification accordingly. So the conditioning is variegated, but the consciousness is essentially the same. I want to enjoy. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The souls exist as enjoying agents. Now, according to how they are conditioned, then they have a particular desire for exploiting matter. So that the desire for exploiting manifests in a variegated way. But at the core, it's just a desire for exploitation. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Although it's like a nicer form of it. But ultimately, basically, in other words, if it doesn't help one to connect to the absolute truth, sense gratification. It's a different conditioning. That's the point. Pakrita niyata soya. So that was my whole point. It's a different conditioning. Well, see, Well, the consciousness is, when we say consciousness, we use that word somewhat synonymously with their subtle body, because the consciousness of the conditioned jiva is identified with his gross and subtle body. So when we're speaking of consciousness, we do so in terms of really their subtle body, which they're identified with at the present moment. So yes, their subtle body is essentially the same. They're trying to enjoy the material world. And some people realize that to enjoy the mode of goodness is more productive than to enjoy the mode of passion and ignorance. So I'll become a social worker in the mode of goodness. And I enjoy by helping other people, enjoy their sense gratification. Because if they're fighting with each other, they can't enjoy sense gratification. And therefore, let me help them realize how to get along so they can enjoy sense gratification. And that makes me feel good. I feel so happy when I do that. You follow. It's all what is in the whole, ask any one of us, why do you do what you do? It makes me smile to see others smiling. That makes me happy. That's the whole bottom line of the whole program. And again, commendable as it may be in terms of the mode of goodness, ultimately it's sense gratification. And how do we know? You tell by looking at the result. The result is repeated birth and death. Oh, that's definitely sense gratification. I've given the example, or it's given there in the one commentary, Bhagavatam. Just like the patriot, he will give up his life for his country. So that seems like a miserable thing to do. Why would you give up? Everyone values their body and their life, but he's willing to give up his life for his country. Why? Because of his self-identity. I am the patriot of this country. And I have to fight for it. That's all a false egoistic conception of self. Sense gratification, sense gratifiers. Yeah, all sense gratifiers. Sense gratification. So, civil rights movement is definitely sense gratification. Again, like I said, when you look at it, we're speaking from an absolute perspective. Now, if you speak from a relativistic perspective, then yes, one is better than another. The mode of good is better than the mode of passion. These revolutions, as noble, seem very noble when you look at it relatively speaking. But when you look at it absolutely, and I'll tell you honestly, my mom, she was telling, she had some friends who had connection with the Black Panther Party. Understand, Black Panther Party was around civil rights movement, and they were like a more aggressive, took a more aggressive approach towards civil rights than Martin Luther King and his persons. And after all that fighting and so on, my mom was telling me this person who was on the in the Black Panther Party, he was like, it was all kind of like useless in the end. He was telling this, sharing this with his mom, because ultimately we're all gonna die. And what was it all for in the end? Okay, now we got freedom. What are we doing with our freedom? Watching television. I mean, what was it all for? Finally, it seemed so noble at the time, but what was it all for? And finally, you quit your body in animal consciousness. So then, wow, how wonderful that is. I get to die just like the cats and dogs, and in full bodily identification with fear, and so much attachment, and so many desires that left unfulfilled, and therefore so much regret. That's how I get to leave my body. So what was it all for? So yes, the civil rights movement was also sense gratification. When Gandhi was doing his movement for independence, and Prabhupada was in his youth was part of that movement. He had some sort of position within that movement as well. When his friend took him to go see Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta. And Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta was giving this pure Krishna conscious knowledge. And Śrīla Prabhupāda at the time of Bai, he told Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta that this is all fine, but first we need to get our independence. And then we can worry about these sort of spiritual topics and so on. And Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta just dismissed that, the whole importance of the whole thing, and said that our real necessity is this Krishna consciousness now. He just dismissed the whole thing as insignificant, That's the stance that a transcendentalist will take towards the material world. Krishna himself says in the very outset of the Gita that the transcendentalist does not lament for the living or the dying. He's just like, he knows what's going on. It's just a world of ignorance and false ego, and it's doing its thing, making some big noise, but no real message is coming out. You follow? To enjoy their sense gratification.
No,
If If we kind of get people to move towards the mode of goodness, it'd make it. Okay, not us, but if others help others move towards the mode of goodness, it might help them. That's what the Varnashram culture is. Varnashram culture was to help people move towards the mode of goodness progressively. It's a multi-life program, but that was the purpose of it, to help conditioned souls move gradually towards the mode of goodness. But there's no Varnashram, so that's not going to happen. Basically, it's like, do people contact transcendentalists or not? Generally, in the modern world, it'll be very hard for them to really move towards the mode of goodness as it is really understood in terms of sacred texts, what the real mode of goodness is. Real mode of goodness means like a Brahminical person, very detached, super simple, super tolerant, super religious, and filled with a lot of realization of spiritual subject matter and so on. That's the mode of goodness. So what we call, there's hardly anyone in the mode of goodness. Like, we may say people who do philanthropy is in the mode of goodness, but they eat meat. And to be, of course, to be in a particular mode of nature, it means to say that that mode is predominating. So we could say that there are people who do things that are goodness in nature, but they're probably in the lower modes of nature. They do a lot of things that are not in goodness as well. And so which one is really predominating in their life? A mode of goodness person is like a very detached, very renounced, very learned, very simple. These are some of the qualities of the mode of goodness. And nowadays, what people consider to be good and bad is all according to the whims of their mental set, their mental apparatus. The mind thinks this is good, that's good, and they go for it. And because somehow other or particular mental aberration seems a little bit more noble than others, we all get on board that particular one. And then we call it goodness, or this is good, but it's really just bewilderment. Everyone's life, is, especially nowadays, is without any sort of guidance whatsoever. Because no one feels that they need guidance anymore. Because the guys that were supposed to be guys, they didn't really guide properly, or they turned out to be charlatans themselves. And therefore, better we just figure it out ourselves and do everything on our own. Our modern culture is a glorification of the individual, like anything. And therefore, what is good, what is bad, whatever the individual thinks is good is bad, good and bad. There is no question of such persons really coming to the real mode of goodness as it is described in the sacred texts. It's just whimsical behavior. And some of whimsical behavior somehow or other appears more noble to us than other whimsical behavior. You know, one whimsical behavior is more in the mode of goodness. Either way, even if we want to glorify, that this will eventually maybe help people move towards the mode of goodness and so on. Fine. That's fine. If we want to think like that, or hope against hope that is actually taking place. Still, without any transcendental knowledge, it'll ultimately be held in vain. Because the modes of nature act in such a way to, again, push a person down. It's not that you can stay up forever in the mode of goodness. If you don't transcend, then the modes of nature do this thing, sometimes you're going down. So however noble that may be, or we may hope against hope that that's going to happen, some people are really out there doing the altruistic thing, it's going to help people move. Even if that were true, time factor will see to the destruction of all good affairs, unless people are using that goodness to really transcend, either devotionally or in some other method, but transcend, the transcendental thing. And if they're not interested in that, then whatever good they do will certainly be destroyed by the time factor. And therefore, ultimately, absolutely speaking, waste of time. But relatively speaking, how noble. Okay, very nice. Do you want to say? Is it false ego that makes us to confuse the relative truth with the absolute truth? Yes. Or ignorance. And false ego kind of seals the deal. Ignorance is the ground of all material conditioning. And then false ego kind of tightens the knot. Therefore, false ego is referred to as the hard knot of the heart, Jidya Granti. So it is ignorance that causes the confusion of the absolute, or sat, with asat. That's called avidya. And then false ego just strengthens that false conception through experience gained in the material world. So every experience gained in the material world is helping to tighten the knot of false ego. Unless you have proper knowledge. This is a remarkable prison. It really is. It's so remarkable. Every little thing you do is really more or less implicating you deeper into the material nature, even however good you think it is. You know, this is really nice. And you're getting more implicated just by such action. Jitendra wants to say that, Greg.
Material knowledge is needed, but it's meant to mitigate our material distress, so it's not real knowledge. And I was thinking about Srila Prabhupada. Well, Bhakti Siddhanta said to Srila Prabhupada about that, you know, the Gandhi movement and stuff. He said, this is kind of like, these are like bubbles in the ocean. We shouldn't be so concerned with that. We have to see the bigger picture. And then Srila Prabhupada
Don't say this in a college reading or anything like that. They really get upset.
Srila Prabhupada was talking with Allen Ginsberg, and Allen Ginsberg said, Prabhupada, you are very conservative. And Prabhupada says, no, I'm very liberal. You are very conservative, because you're only conserving yourself with your own sense gratification. And we also say everybody, you know, is situated according to their knowledge, and everybody's situated according to the modes of nature which they acquired. And then we say, what good will everybody acts according to their knowledge, and what good will repression accomplish? So we're all acting, but most of us are acting foolishly. And there's a few other things I'll have to say, but I'll probably remember it like 10 minutes later. But let's see here. You can find out where a person's at by asking them what they like or what they dislike. You can kind of feel them out like that.
What type of cis gratification they like.
They say like rednecks like rednecks like things that are shiny and naked, you know, where somebody might, you know. But one thing here that I kind of a little perplexed on the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, for example, if one wants a beautiful wife, he is advised to worship Uma, or the goddess Durga.
Yes.
But then it says, if one wants to be cured of a disease, he is advised to worship the sun god. Yeah. But we don't want to be in a disease condition if we're performing devotional service. Prabhupada says our health, we should take care of our health.
So you don't see what's wrong with worshiping the sun god?
What's that?
There's nothing wrong with worshiping the sun god to get a healthy body so we can serve Krishna.
Yeah, but he kind of categorizes it here with people want beautiful wives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in that same paragraph.
Because it is another type of...
It's a material desire, and, you know, to have a disease-free body is good for... You can't perform your service if you're diseased.
Okay, so a simple question. When they go to the sun god to ask for the health of their body, do they go so they can be healthy to serve Krishna, or do they go so they can be healthy to enjoy sense gratification? So therefore, the connection is made, that relationship is made. Sure. Of course, like the gopis, they worship Katyayani, who's also a form of Durga, for the purpose of getting Krishna. So there should be no inherent fault in that, if they're really doing it for their devotional service. Blink. Sure. Okay, Greg.
It's going dead.
Yeah, just turn it off. Yeah. So if we don't get our material desires fulfilled, our mind becomes more and more restless. So what do we do in the meantime? As we're trying to move towards transcendence, but my material desires aren't getting fulfilled, and I get restless, how much of those material desires should I actually pursue? The funny thing is that by getting material desires fulfilled, the mind becomes restless as well. Like I've often mentioned that desires network, like Facebook, there's networking, you know? You go to one page with one friend, you say, oh, I know this one too, and then you start clicking on them. So similarly, material desires work like that. They're networking. It's not that you just get that one desire. Another example, like my mom used to tell me, if you ever want to get married, you have to see the girl's whole family. Don't just see the girl, because you don't just get her, you get her whole family. So in a similar way, desires network. It's not that there's just one desire. So I've given a simple example. You have a desire, let's say brahmachari, you have a desire for a wife. Then along with that one desire comes, well, I need a house. So then a desire for a house pops up. In order to get the house, I need money. So then that pops up. In order to get money, I need a degree, because even to be a janitor, you need a college education these days. And so I need to go to school. In order to go to school, I need money. So I need to get a little bit of a job so I can get enough money to pay for my classes, so I can get a degree, so I can get a real job, so I can get a house, so I can have a wife. You see what I'm saying? So one desire networks to other desires. And so it is not a fact that if I get my desires fulfilled, I'll become peaceful. And even if you do become temporarily satisfied, it will be very short-lived. Krishna himself has told in the Bhagavad Gita that the way karma works is that it covers knowledge. That's first thing. First thing it does is cover knowledge or wisdom, pragya, insight. Second thing it does is it creates a burning sensation in the heart. And third thing, it's a burning sensation that can never be satisfied. So that means you'll go on trying to figure out how to enjoy. That's the nature of karma, for those in the mode of passion. So it is not a fact that if my desires are satisfied, I'll become peaceful. Rather, you become more restless. So if I don't get them satisfied, I also feel restless. So therefore, Krishna is giving instruction to tolerate that. A person who has knowledge will recognize what's taking place, and he'll tolerate. That's the instruction that Krishna gives in chapter 2, verse 14. And in chapter verse 15 of the same chapter, he using the word dira, and Srila Baladeva Dibhushana said, iriyati di, one who makes his intelligence fixed on dharma, is called as dira. So that means he's a person of knowledge. He knows what's taking place. Some desires are coming up. I want to pursue them. They're creating a little restlessness in the mind. But intelligence is also there. And intelligence will fix his mind on the actual objective and just tolerate the desires. I've described it as walking a tightrope. You've often heard me give this sort of description. You're walking a tightrope. And when you walk a tightrope, you have to keep your eyes straight on the other side. Don't look anywhere else. Otherwise, you'll fall. You have to stay extremely focused and just walk across straight. And so that's what intelligence will help us to do. We purify our intellect, keep us on the straight and narrow path towards Krishna. And what the mind will do, mind is like Maya's main agent. The mind will present distractions in the form of beginningless desires for enjoyment. So I often describe those desires as like, just to distract you, just to get your attention. You know, so you're walking, you're trying to walk across, and then the mind, just anything, you know, so that you'll just look and then you'll fall off the tightrope. So a person who has his intelligence fixed on the actual goal of his life, then he will not allow the distracting disturbances of the mind that are coming from either side to move him. He'll just tolerate that and continue to remain focused. Otherwise, it's like I fulfill my desire. Just like oftentimes people think, I need to get married because I need a companion who will satisfy me, this, that. Then they get married, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Then they come to you a few weeks later. That was the worst mistake that I made. That's not meant to be a shot at Grihastha Ashram or anything. Sometimes I get criticized for that. I'm just giving a common thing that is often seen, even in devotee sanghas. It's quite common, actually. So therefore, Krishna's advising us to act with knowledge and not act based on desires that appear in the mind rather whimsically. You should perform action with knowledge backing you. You know, every action should be informed by proper wisdom coming from the sacred texts, like the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you'll always be distracted and bewildered by whatever's going on in the mind. And, oh, if I don't satisfy that, I'll be unhappy, I'll be restless. You'll be restless either way, and unhappy. So tolerate. Justin wanted to say something interesting. We'll finish. What? With what? Just ask. There's no big deal. Okay. Yeah, no problem. No problem. Okay. Okay. Right. As a gradation. But he doesn't propagate those things. Well, I'm not speaking out against the modes of nature, so you misunderstand me if you think. Well, if you were in the mode of goodness, you probably wouldn't be able to come to the simple either. See, that means you're thinking that by being a particular mode, that may be more favorable to bhakti than not being a particular mode. And that means that bhakti would be caused by something else other than bhakti, which would be a misunderstanding of the at least the philosophical stance of how devotional service is gained. It is not caused by karma in any way. So some karma or action, karma means action. Action being the mode of goodness or passion or ignorance cannot cause bhakti. Only bhakti can cause bhakti. And since a bhakta is a reservoir of bhakti, then it is he who allows his entrance into the realm of bhakti, and not my being the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. So that it doesn't follow that a one in the mode of goodness will come to bhakti. It's who has the association of bhakti, generally through the association of a bhakta, or even sometimes with sacred texts, who gain such association. Now who's in what mode of nature? Because those in the mode of ignorance have come to bhakti, being deep in the mode of ignorance. There's so many examples of that in the scripture. So also those in the mode of passion have also come to bhakti. So also those in goodness. So it's not because they were in passion, goodness, or ignorance. It's because they gained the association generally of a bhakta. So to think that someone is in the mode of goodness, and therefore that's a misunderstanding of the philosophical precepts of bhakti. No. That's why this is one of the glorifications of bhakti, in fact, as opposed to Gyan and Yoga. Because Gyan and Yoga will have some of these criteria. You have to be so much in the mode of goodness, you have to have so much of purity, you have to perform these sorts of activities before. Whereas bhakti can manifest spontaneously anywhere, especially when bhaktas are involved, then they can bestow bhakti upon anyone in any condition of life. And it has whether they're deep in the mode of ignorance or passion or goodness. And even those in the mode of goodness, without such association, don't gain bhakti. So it is a misunderstanding to think that one's influence in the modes of nature determine the our ability to at least come to bhakti. Now, it is a fact that after we gain the association of bhakti, we begin to understand something about bhakti, our practices are influenced by the modes of nature. Our practices, because we're still under the modes, and so our understandings, our application is still, is called, you could say, contaminated or mixed with the modes of nature. But our ability to come to bhakti has nothing to do with being in the mode of goodness or anything like that. So it's not like, oh, if we make the society more in the mode of goodness, they'll come to bhakti. It's just a question of, do they get the association of God or bhakta, these reservoirs or shelters of bhakti? Yes. 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 Network of illusions. Yeah. Yeah, this is a story. This story is told by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Don't worry, even if you discourage, illusion will re-encourage. Yeah. Illusion is strong enough to encourage anyone in any situation, however discouraged they've been from it. We have practical experience with that. No. Desires for sense gratification? Because, as Krishna has described in Bhagavad Gita, that even a man of knowledge will act according to the impressions fixed in his subtle body from beginningless time. So therefore, what can repression accomplish? This verse from Bhagavad Gita. The idea is that in context of where this verse appears, Krishna has described the negative consequences of those who don't follow what he says in the sacred text. And so the hypothetical question comes up, well, aren't people afraid of this consequence? Aren't they afraid of this consequence? And then Krishna, in response to that, says that even a man of knowledge will act according to these impressions, which kind of forces his hand. So therefore, what can repression accomplish? And then the discussion goes forward. So the point is that even wisdom, same another verse similar to this in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, that the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they carry away the mind even of a man of wisdom, who is trying to control them. In other words, if a person hasn't really realized Krishna, then the rasa varjam, the thirst for enjoyment, is still situated in his subtle body. Then eventually, even if he has wisdom, it causes the senses to be intractable. You know, the senses find the sense objects irresistible. And it can ultimately only be controlled by higher taste, purandrasdvandavartate, Krishna consciousness. So, yeah. Well, demigods are devotees. They are devotees, so they do have some devotion, but it's mixed devotion. And they, along with their devotion, they have knowledge. They have amazing knowledge. Therefore, Krishna glorified their prayers. Their prayers are full with so much wonderful knowledge of devotion. And yet, because they're mixed devotees, they find themselves moved by this subtle body, this impressions of desire and hate, such as life. So, in this way, you can understand a true devotee, or even transcendentalist in a more generic terms, is truly an amazing entity. It's to not have any desires whatsoever, is like, except for the desire to please Krishna, is extraordinary. So, even these great devotees, like the demigods, they exhibit material affection, which is very hard to break. Okay then. Thank you all very much for sticking around. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaudiya Premanandi, hari om.